I have worked for it. I was studying along the way, always learning. Because one thing is, you know, I'll say to developers now or anybody, even if you're developing now and you're happy, you still have to be thinking of the future. What is your end game? You know, you can never really stop at least planning what you want to do next, even if you're happy where you are. Because, you know, you never know what's going to happen. You never know, one day you might come in and just say, you know what, I don't really fancy it anymore. And
Hi, Joseph. How are you?
Hello, Dora. Yes, I'm very good and lovely to chat to you.
Lovely to see you too. Thank you for coming to the show. I called you here because you have quite a remarkable journey in tech. And you were a programmer before, and then at some point in your life, you decided to switch careers. I just basically called you here to let us know what was going through your head at the time you took the decision, why you took the decision, and, you know, how is it going? So tell me a bit about you. What did you study and how did you decide to work in tech?
Right. Yeah. So great question. And definitely the thing with programming is, I think once a programmer, you're always a programmer.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you how that began. It actually, well, I think tech came to me actually. 1991, my dad got myself and my two brothers at the time, a Commodore 64. Those of you old enough, like myself, might remember that. And the great thing with Commodore 64 at the time was it came with a manual, and it gave you basic programming and basic where you could program sprites. So after playing Batman a few times, I thought, oh, let's have a look at this coding language and basic, and I really got a buzz for it at 11. And from then on, I knew that I wanted to learn a bit more about tech. So I went on to study computer science for my bachelor's degree. And then I actually did a master's a couple of years later on in information systems, which was a combination of the business with computing. And from then on, my journey in tech began. Really, that's how I stayed in it.
All right. I hear that a lot lately from people that are either programmers or doing business-related jobs. They studied a combination of technology and business, which is, I guess it's really important to take it out, because I only did computer science and my master's degree was in multimedia. And we only did one module that was related to business. So yeah, that's really interesting to know that there's degrees out there that basically combine both of them. That's amazing. So what was your first job title then?
Right. So I was fortunate enough that after doing actually my bachelor's in computer science, I got a role in Reading, where I lived at the time, as a web manager from e-learning company. So we were maintaining the websites for their numerous kind of government organizations at the time as well, just to teach people who, for instance, went into the armed services, they didn't go to conventional higher education, but they still needed to learn numeracy and literacy. So I was making those kind of nice little drag and drop tests that they drag. Does this sentence make sense? And I was using a 3GL, a third generation language at the time, called Metacard, which I don't know if it still exists, but it's kind of an early form of VB, you know, Visual Basic Action Script, right? Very early. So I was doing that, but then also doing the old Macromedia Dreamweaver with ASP active server pages. I don't know if they still exist as well. Probably changed to ASP.NET now.
It's funny that you say Macromedia Dreamweaver. Is it the one that Adobe bought?
This is correct. Yeah, so before, remember, Flash, Macromedia Flash 4, Macromedia Flash 5, and Macromedia Dreamweaver were all Macromedia tools before Adobe bought them all. Yeah.
Wow, yeah, back in the day. I think I used Macromedia, the equivalent of Flash, I think it's called Macromedia Flash, the one that used to have this language called Lingo, if I'm not mistaken, something like that, before ActionScript.
I think that's right. I think that was actually, but also that was Director. I think.
Oh, yeah, that's the Director. Sorry, that's the name.
Macromedia Director that had Lingo, because you did multimedia, didn't you? So you would likely have used that to make your little animations, little bits of code.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember
exactly
that.
Director. So that was, yeah, that was every old front-end developer that then moved to Flash has done a bit of this, I think. Sure. Did you enjoy the front-end development?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I still do. I mean, the great thing is you actually get to see something happening. You know, my first thing was trying to make a sprite of Ken and Ryu. I wanted to make it and see them doing a "How you, Ken?" You know, so I enjoy doing that. You know, you love seeing it work, don't you? Because you go for a lot of error. And once you finally get rid of that last error, it's kind of massive satisfaction, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. So just to let my listeners know, you were a programmer for a long time. We worked together in the same company. Yeah. And you're a very talented programmer, but then at some point you decided to take the business route. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I brought you here is that I think, I'm not sure, there's a lot of programmers that reach a point where they're like, okay, this is it. Technology is moving too fast. I'm kind of tired. I know I am in that point. but I think I have my moments. I go on that point and then I get out of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, is there anything else for me in the tech industry? Maybe I can do something business related. And I know that there are a lot of people that work in tech that have the same feelings and the same thoughts. So what made you take the decision to leave programming, and what kind of career did you pursue?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And actually, I had the same thoughts as you're mentioning just there. Even after a year from my first job, when I left university, I was a year working as web manager. Even then, I wanted to know a bit more about the why. You know, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this way? And so that's why I followed the master's in information systems, as in what is the purpose of this information system? You know, what's the outcome? What is the job to be done? You know, that's the common lingo at the moment. What is the customer or the user getting from this? And because I was asking more and more of those questions, as I was, as you said, 12 years as a developer, literally kind of you get in a spec, do this. This is the result. If you've done that, you've done your job, tick. I started asking questions, but hang on, but why are we doing this? And who's benefiting from this? Can we do this another way? And it gets to a point when the more senior you rise as a developer, you know, the key thing with developing is you've never finished until the thing works. So even if you know you've kind of designed it well and it should work, when it's giving you the error, you can't really go home.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's on your mind. You go home feeling you failed the day. And I didn't want to feel that way. I wanted to kind of, and as also I was building a small family as well. And as you mentioned, with all the new frameworks and coding languages and APIs, and also the cliqueness, I find there was a growing cliqueness, the higher you got up, of people saying, oh, that's not the right way to code. That's, you know, you need this framework. You need this MVP style, MVC style. I thought, you know, I used to just hack about and get things done. So I couldn't, I just thought, I want to get more into the why and more into strategic decisions. So, and I just thought, as a future, you need to reach a ceiling. You really need to be either a CTO or kind of, you know, that or something else. So I got to that point of, I don't really want to go into more technical leadership.
Yeah.
And so the obvious move for me was to go into the actual product ownership side.
Right. So what does a product owner actually do?
Yep. Well, yeah, the main goals of a product owner, I'll say, are understanding the requirements of it should be the customer. Sometimes it's of the manager, but it shouldn't be. It should always be of the customer, of the product. What are their main requirements when using your product? And prioritizing those. So not just things that look good, things that actually are most important to, you know, the success of that product. And success doesn't just mean work. It, as in the product works, it should mean keeping people coming back, eventually making more money, essentially, you know, putting your app in the spotlight. That's what I define success at. And so prioritization, roadmap management, also often a little bit of people management, because developers, QAs, sometimes need encouragement and motivation as well. So there's definitely a little bit of that about it. And then also, I think communicating that vision, you know, you are the gatekeeper for your product. So you need to be strong and say, this is what we're doing. This is why we've done it this way. And if it fails, you know, own up to it. You know, fail fast is often a measure of success. So so it's essentially just being a gatekeeper for your product and then building the momentum for it as you go forward.
Yeah. Does this job require you to know the new technologies that are out there? And do you follow the new technologies in programming?
You know, it requires you to not get the wool pulled over your eyes, if you know what I mean. So often you can have very good product owners or product managers who don't really know tech at all, but they read enough and they know enough about what tech or what features of tech work for their products. So they don't get devs telling them, oh, that's not possible, or this is going to take 5 weeks, you know. And fortunately, because I've been a developer, they don't try to do that. They often, if I say, like, I want this new feature, and I say, oh, Joe, they never say that's going to take longer than it does, because they know that I'll start asking questions.
Yeah.
So it does definitely help to keep an eye, an ear to the ground of what's coming out, what's possible. But I'm not as close as I used to be to it, to be honest with you. But I still have to keep knowledgeable about what's happening, just so I can build my product, make it grow in line with what the market, our competitors are doing, because competitors are using the latest tech. So we need to be using the latest tech as well. But you know what? If you have good advocates, you build kind of buy-in from your team, you can make sure your tech lead or senior developers don't, you know, buy into your vision as well. So they should be keeping you updated of what's new as well. And that really helps you.
That's true. That's true. You mentioned a very, very good point there, that if as a programmer, you change career routes and you go into business, and you basically have this really important skill, which is you know exactly how long things take, and you can't be fooled, and you can not just being fooled, but you can follow a process that's more up to the point. And I find that one of the main reasons for a programmer to change career routes and go into business, because they are already skilled to do the job. So you have the skills, you know the technologies. Obviously, you need to learn a lot of new things on the way, but it's not that you go into this business blindly. You know, you do have the skills to do something different that's related to business. Is a product owner kind of similar to a product manager, or are they different?
Do you know what? It's a great question. And it's one often, you know, product people get asked. Now, as you'll know, I was a product owner for a number of positions before my current position, which is a product manager. And really, that should be the way around, because there is a distinction. So a product owner is the gatekeeper for their product, but that product is very much looking insular at the performance of that product. So for instance, I used to be a product owner for Bingo at my previous company, and I made sure that the Bingo product that we were exporting, you know, worked well. We had happy customers, happy users, you know, there were a few errors, few complaints, it got nice feedback. And so my measure was just, yep, is Bingo doing well? Tick. As a product manager, there is more to it. You'll probably manage more than Bingo. You'll probably look at the whole, for instance, gaming structure, probably.
Right.
But you could also be just a product manager of Bingo, but your role will then be closer to the management team, as in, what is the strategic goal of Bingo within your organization? What's the next steps for it? Which markets do you want it to go to? And what are your competitors doing? Do you want to get new competitors off them? Which territories do you want to overtake? And how, you know, and you're looking at your dev teams, how much is it costing? So you're actually looking a lot more at strategic and the commercial business rather than just the pure product. But you have to still keep that tactical awareness. You know, you have to still know, if you're going to go into a new territory next month, is your product owner ready for that? You know, Are they all set up? Have they got localized languages, etc.? So you still have to know your product ownership skills, but you are one step removed from it. You are much more looking at the business strategic road rather than the tactical roadmap. Yeah.
Right. That's very good to know. I really get confused with all these names in tech. So it's especially the ones on the business side that I don't know that well. And it's really nice that you clear things up. So does a product manager also overlook the work of product owners?
Yes, they can do. So the term product owner came from Scrum, really. It came from like the Scrum Alliance thing, but now it's widely adopted as a measure. Some companies just have a product owner and a senior product owner, but in more commonly, you have a product owner and then a product manager, and a product manager would tend to work with the product owner. So for instance, I manage a product owner, their work streams, but we work closely together. We will both prioritize the roadmap, but I will just communicate more with senior management and they will communicate more with the team directly. So so that's it's kind of a partnership as well.
Yeah. Are you still working in gaming or have you left the world of gaming behind?
No, well, again, you don't ever really leave the world of gaming in a way. People look at your CV and they say, okay, you're a dev for a long time and you're a dev in gaming for a long time. So they want to make the best of it and it makes sense. And in fact, when I left where I used to work with you, I went into that kind of totally different industry and I found that I was a bit lost because, you know, I was doing product ownership, which I loved and I did well at, but I didn't really like the topic, you know, what they were doing. It didn't really interest me enough. So I realized that, you know what, I need to be in sport and gaming. So that's kind of how I went back into the industry. And my current role is great because it marries up gamification, which is my remit. My current company is gamification as well as the web experience for our product. So gamification are things like leaderboards and points, and then using gamified features to encourage people to come back and stay loyal and sign up and give their first party data to the company. I mean, my current company, I know you might ask later on, Monterosa, we deal in that audience, real-time audience engagement, and effectively for working with our customers to kind of realize that, you know, realize that engagement. So for instance, the ITV apps like Love Island, X Factor, Britain's Got Talent, we handle the voting for them. So we want to maximize, you know, users using their apps and just make sure that it's fun for them as well. You know, you can vote, and if you vote, you get this opportunity, you get this many votes next time. So I'm trying to maximize that.
Okay, that's very interesting. So it's like a voting system, but you're trying to like keep them interested in gamifying it. That's very...
Monetization, loyalty, and conversion, really. So for ITV, we want to, if you use their apps, we want you to carry on using their apps. So any way we can do that, it might not be voting, it might be something else, but just to keep them interested coming back to their apps. Yeah.
Okay, that's very interesting. So what are your obligations? Like, what's your day-to-day life as a product manager at Monterosa?
Yep. So usually I personally sync up with very senior management. So the CEO I report into. So just keeping them in a loop of what we're prioritizing, what's coming next, what we think the market's looking for. Because often, you know, we have to get ahead of the market. We have to nearly sell what we think is going to work well and then build it afterwards in a way, just so you're ahead of the game. So my day-to-day is making sure my team's aware of the commercial strategy as well, what our competitors are doing and how our experiences can be exceptional. So not just functional, but actually make a difference, you know, put us on the map. And we want to, and because we sell direct to customers in the B2B, we want to make sure that once they're using our products, they're not going to want to look elsewhere. You know, we want to keep them using our products. So that's part of my job, making sure design is up to date, you know, lovely design, lovely UX, lovely product, etc., and making sure those numbers, those metrics are really good. So I'm talking to data teams, UX, senior management, development, you know, all corners of the spectrum. So that's my day to day is very different to when we were developing. And I know your day to day is different as well now.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting. Are you happy that you took that decision? And would you go back to programming?
Do you know what? Yeah, I'm very happy. I think, you know, often it seems a bit daunting, but I never thought, you know, when we worked together, that when I went into product ownership, I would be kind of, you know, I would say like doing as well as I am quite quickly, because, you know, I have only really been doing this for 3 or 4 years now, and to already be a product manager is quite good. But then I have worked for it. I was studying along the way, always learning, because one thing is, you know, I'll say to developers now or anybody, even if you're developing now and you're happy, you still have to be thinking of the future. What is your end game? You know, you can never really stop at least planning what you want to do next, even if you're happy where you are, because, you know, you never know what's going to happen. You never know, one day you might come in and just say, you know what, I don't really fancy it anymore. And I was doing self-learning, you know, the LinkedIn courses, certified Scrum product ownership courses, going to the product meetups, you know, just keeping in the loop, that all helps, you know, that all helps me kind of be successful as well. So my interest at the moment is Python and data science. So predictive modeling, things like that, I am really doing. And that's because I really enjoy it. And there's nothing better as a motivation as something you really enjoy, you know?
Yeah,
so I love making those models in Python and then sort of seeing how they play out, you know, when you try out. So I still do a bit of programming in my spare time, but not kind of professionally, but more just in my own time. So I still like to keep my ear to the ground, but I don't think I'll ever go back to being a programmer full time.
That's nice. That's very interesting. Do you still work from home? And what's, you know, this whole big debate these days, do you want to keep on working from home, or would you rather go back to an office?
Do you know what? I think everyone's circumstance is different in these aspects. So my company at the moment, Montrosa, is really good in terms of there's no pressure. We would like to get people together when they can do, but there's no obligation. I'm probably going to want to try to go back at least a couple of days a week. The great thing is we can kind of pick our days, as long as really our team and our management are happy and we're doing work, we're communicating, everyone's fine. I've got three daughters, and you know, it's a great chance to, you know, as soon as you finish work, you can immediately pick up your little girl straight away without getting on the train. Yeah. So that's great for me. But for some people who live on their own, they would want to probably be more together with other people. So for them, they'll probably want to go in the office more. But then if you're, say, an anxious person, or, you know, you don't necessarily like lots of people, you might love this now. Yeah. So it's very different for different people.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, I totally understand that if you have a family with kids, you just spend a lot more time with them. But then it's the, you know, if you're like kind of an introvert, I guess.
Yeah.
On one side, it's good for you because you don't have socialize as much. But on the other side, is it really good for an introvert to just stay at home all day? You know, I don't know. For me, I'm really curious to see how things will evolve.
We started when at more or less the same time. And I think we kind of got on very well because I think we were quite similar characters.
Yeah.
You know, friendly, but not necessarily the loudest person in the room. You know, we were both kind of introverted at the time, you know. And I think actually what helped is just putting yourself out there, as you said, you know, you're doing this podcast, etc. Putting yourself out there, presenting a lot more, taking higher roles, and actually it helps you. It helps you to not be as shy, doesn't it? It really
that
helps
is so
you
true.
So you're spot on about that.
Yeah. There's so many YouTubers that put themselves out there now, like daily videos and stuff, and they're actually introverts in real life.
Yeah,
it's just one step at a time, really. Sure. So this. Your whole journey, it's very, very interesting, very inspirational, especially for younger developers or developers that are on this stage in their lives that they want to basically see a different career. So what would your advice be for a programmer that wants to change career paths in the tech industry?
Well, yes, and it's a really good question. I think, first of all, people have to really know deep down what they want to do. It can't just be a today I want to do something. It has to be a real kind of yearning to change. So that could be into anything else, but you have to really want to do it. And then you have to really put yourself out there to learn and upskill in that thing you want to do. You know, you got to put your money where your mouth is. I paid my own money for the courses I did, you know, product meetups I did. Nobody sponsored me for those. I wanted to do it and I wanted to change. Because funnily enough, the company we were at, actually, they were very good at, they did initiatives where you could have a chance to be a role you never really had a chance to be. And that was really great thing. Not everyone does that, but that was really cool.
Yeah.
And so you've got a real taste of what is you're going to be in for. And I think what happens is after that, once you start applying for roles, because I was in developing for say 12 years and, you know, quite high level for it, it's hard to just say, I want to do something else and I want to not go down in money. That's the biggest thing. You know that if you get to quite high level and you want to change completely, you're nearly going to have to start from the beginning. And so I did. I mean, when I moved, I had to take a bit of a pay cut to start nearly as a junior product owner when I left developing. And unfortunately, it was only 3 months till I moved up. So I was very lucky in that respect. It was 3 months, but you can expect a much longer trajectory. And then it worked out for me in the end, you know, so I did better. And the ceiling, I think, is a lot greater because I didn't want to go into tech leadership. But what I would say is persistence, just not saying no for an answer. Because many people said to me, oh, Joe, you're a developer. Don't worry about product. Don't, you know, just stay a developer. You could be a senior developer. And I said, yeah, but I don't want to be doing that. And you know, you have to just back yourself and not just give up at the first hurdle, because you'll get a lot of knockbacks. People will say, oh, nah, it's not for you. Don't worry about it. Look, you've got all the experience here. You know, they're not going to employ you because you're going to want this much money and you're already, you know, it's hard. So you nearly just have to build connections with people in the industry you want to be in, upskill, learn the lingo, actually do demos and do podcasts and do videos. Put yourself out there, you know, upskill your CV and just trust yourself that something will turn up, and it will. Yeah. You just got to really put yourself out there and back yourself as well.
That's a very, very interesting point. I guess if you are at a later stage of your career as a programmer, you will, you know, it's in the tech industry these days, you will earn good money compared to, you know, other jobs. So in order to change career paths, you will have to downgrade in terms of your salary. In order to go into business. That's very interesting. I guess my advice would be, and I've never done it myself, but my advice would be, you know, if you're really passionate about this industry and not just programming, just go for it. Because as you said, it took you 3 months to move on from being a junior product owner. And like I said, you do have the skills. The skills are there. You just have to get to know how the business works a bit. And you'll get there. That's a very interesting point. You mentioned gaming and you said it's very hard to leave the world of gaming. That's quite funny because I've done it and it took, you're right, it's difficult because your CV is filled with gaming stuff. And every single recruiter that approaches you is from the gaming industry. And it's like, and because there's a lot of competition in the gaming industry, the companies want to steal you in a way from another company. So they will give you more money to go for an interview with them and everything. But I somehow managed to get away. Not because, you know, I didn't want to continue. I just wanted something different in my life. And you're right. The first few months were a bit difficult because I was like, I went from building games to single page applications. And it was, that's a bit boring, isn't it? It's just, so would you do, I know you said you've already tried it and you went back to gaming, but would you do something completely different? Like, would you go to data science, for example, as you mentioned?
100%. See, now I would. Now, because it was just 12 years and then suddenly a new thing, it was kind of a bit of a shock. But now, because I've been out there and I've actually done not just gaming, so with Montrose, we do entertainment, media, sport, different things. Yeah. I'm much more now able to not just, you know, focus everything on, oh, there must be a game and there must be some points to be won. You know,
yeah.
I'm happier exactly to go into other industries now, for sure. But then again, I wouldn't count it out, gaming. But gaming to me is just now another one that I would consider. It's not the only one, which is, yeah, as you said, what it used to be. It used to be the only one. Let me look at game companies I could go to. Now there's other avenues. And so for sure, I definitely wouldn't rule it out, but it's definitely something I would not seek out either.
Yeah. Right. Thank you very much for your time. I know we're both in our lunch break. So thank you so much for joining.
As usual.
Such a pleasure to see you. Right. Bye-bye.
If you made it this far, that means that you're enjoying the show. So why don't you go to Apple Podcasts and write a review for The Verified Geek. You can find us on all the podcast platforms like Apple, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. You can also find us on Instagram at verified_geek. And we have a channel on YouTube, Verified Geek. Thank you so much for listening.